Tonight on the Daily Debrief.
His body just went boom.
The jury has the case of the Ohio woman.
She did it.
Accused of murdering her military husband.
Why did she shoot?
Plus, evidence of a family of four buried in the desert. And guess who's getting the reward money in the case of a missing Wisconsin teen who turned up alive? This is the Daily Debrief for Thursday, January 24th. And good evening, everybody. On behalf of Judge Ashley Wilcott and myself, welcome to the Debrief this Thursday evening. A verdict in the case of an Ohio woman who took the stand and admitted she shot and killed her military husband. This case was filled with testimony about his sexual behavior and her suicide attempts. The real question was not who did it, but rather the degree of the crime. Wife Claudia Herrig disputed the state's theory of why she killed Ohio Air Force Reserve Major Carl Herrig. The state said Claudia drained Carl's bank accounts, sent his money overseas to her relatives, bought a gun, and practiced all before pulling the trigger. She then fled to her native country of Brazil. The state wanted to convict Herrig of aggravated murder with a firearm. That requires premeditation, and it carries a life sentence under state law. The defense, however, sought a voluntary manslaughter conviction. That charge would have required jurors to agree that the shooting occurred in a fit of rage. The sentence on that charge is 3 to 10 years. This defense strategy did not work. Here is the verdict.
We, the jury in this case, duly impaneled and sworn or affirmed, find the defendant, Claudia C. Herrig, guilty of aggravated murder as she stands charged in the first count of the indictment, dated this date, signed by all 12 jurors. As to the specification, we, the jury in this case, duly impaneled and sworn or affirmed, find the defendant, Claudia C. Herrig, did at the time of committing aggravated murder have a firearm on or about her person under her control, brandished the iron. A firearm indicated that she possessed it or used it to facilitate the offense. Again, dated this date and signed by all 12 jurors. Ms. Fowler, did I properly read the verdict of your jury? Anything further from the state?
No, Your Honor.
Anything further from the defendant?
No, Your Honor.
From there, deputies took Claudia Herrig into custody. Sentencing is in a few weeks. Closing arguments, like many aspects of this case, were heated. The defense attacked the state's theory of premeditation and pointed to a romantic contact the defendant had outside her marriage.
Why did she shoot him? Why did she come up with this entire plan for premeditation? The state told you in opening it was because he was leaving her. Now, if she was so afraid of him leaving her, if she didn't want a divorce, why, after she gets out of the hospital after her suicide attempt, does she go back on Match.com and start meeting another person? Why is she talking with Bruce Rogers? Why is she carrying on a relationship with him if she's so upset by her husband leaving her that she's going to kill him? Now, Bruce Rogers. Interesting thing about Bruce Rogers is he was on the state's witness list.
Objection.
Criminal Rule 16 says I can clearly comment on it.
He was on the list and he wasn't called.
Right.
Don't comment on what he might have said.
He was on the witness list. State had indicated he was on their list. State knew about it, Mr. Rogers.
The defense then looped back to Herrig's decision to purchase a gun and to key testimony about the size of the bullets.
She tells you on the stand a number of things that the state doesn't dispute. She tells you, and we all agree, she went to the store and she bought a gun, .357 for Slugmasters. She lied to the person at the store and said she wanted it for protection. Yeah, she lied at the store, she wanted protection. You heard the person. If somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to buy this gun to kill myself, they're not selling them a gun. So she goes to the store and buys a gun. She buys the ammunition for the gun. She gets laser grips put on the gun. She buys two kinds of ammunition, ladies and gentlemen, .357 and .38. Interestingly, the person at the gun store tells you .357 hollow points are what you use when you want to stop and kill somebody. .38s are what you use for practice. When you look at the report of Dr. Chappelle, and you have the report, and you will remember his testimony, that the bullets they pulled out of Carl Harris, the bullets they pulled out that killed him, were 38s.
Yeah, I don't object, Your Honor.
It's in the report.
Now, to some of the prosecution's rebuttal.
You're going to find from the photographs that you have that this man was shot on the right side of his head. He's lying like that, and you will see the photograph of his blood, and that bullet stuck right in the floor. She didn't give any of that until he confronted her over an hour into this tape session. When she was confronted with, we got a closed wound. That's possible. That makes a huge difference in the scenario. Because the circumstantial and the evidence you have from her statement, it's for you to decide how it goes together. It has been a crooked puzzle.
Objection.
That she has portrayed a crooked puzzle. The pieces don't fit. They don't fit because she could not tell you the truth.
The state got loud when arguing about the size of the bullets and their relevance to the case.
I think you're going to find a report that says 38 caliber. That's the size of the bullet.
Objection.
Overruled. The jury will determine.
You had plenty of evidence about the loaded 357. You can look at the shells. That's the size of the bullet and also the base of the bullet. Remember Slitter, Martin, talking how a 38 can go into 357? There is not that much difference in the bullets. And remember Philo? He said it doesn't matter if you have a 38 or a 357, they're going to kill you.
I'm going to object.
Overrule.
He did not say that.
It doesn't make a difference. Thank you, Your Honor. It doesn't make a difference in this case whether she uses the 38 or the 357. She's buying all the ammo. She's going home with the gun. This man is leaving that house. He was on a flight, and she's talking to her boyfriend while he's on the flight.
You didn't have
closing arguments, proceed.
You have no evidence Carl was running around with anyone. Did you find another pathologist coming in this courtroom to say that Philo wasn't telling the truth? None. As Mr. Becker showed you, there's no self-defense, there's no insanity.
Objection. I've never raised any of that.
He didn't say there was one. He said there wasn't one. Go ahead.
Next, the state vehemently disputed the defendant's version of what happened when she pulled the trigger.
Sure, Carl's not here to say what he was doing down the bottom of the steps, but I know one darn thing for sure, he never fell down those steps.
I'm going to object.
Thank you, Your Honor. He didn't fall down those steps. He was at the bottom of the steps. She had her laser on him and shooting him and killing him. Now, let's talk about where's the shoes located. This man said, you know, if you shoot somebody's freaking shoes, they're going to move, of course. What did the doctor say? You get that gunshot wound number A, didn't kill him, went down, it's going to disable you. You just shot a man. He's down at the bottom of the steps. If you're getting ready to put your shoes on, that's for you to infer whether you believe that. You can disregard it. What happens? He's moving.
Objection. He just said he wasn't moving.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, you know what the testimony was. Let's wrap it up, Mr. Watkins.
It's Your Honor, it was covered by him. He's you're shot, you're moving. Things are going to be in a different position. And remember Dr. Fila. He said, A, from behind, crouch. It's in his pocket. Remember? B, it didn't come out of his chest. My likely theory is that he's on the floor when he shot with B. It stays in it. And, no doubt, you believe our evidence. 12 to 24 inches from his head. Coup de grace. Bang. She did it.
A lot of fireworks there. Juvenile Court Judge Ashley Wilcott is with us tonight here on The Debrief. So, Judge Wilcott, let's talk about the objections. This case might have set the record for the number of objections, and I only saw one of them in the clips we played that was backed up with an actual rule to resolve the issue. What's going on here?
Right. So it is unusual. During closing, an attorney makes the why argument based on the evidence presented and the reasonable inferences. But I see this in court a lot in terms of not the objections, but they get very emotional about their case, very passionate. And I think both of these attorneys demonstrated super emotional, super passionate. Did they cross the line? Maybe, maybe not. But they did get into a habit of making objections. And the judge, I think, got a little irritated with it.
I would agree. And you sit on the bench, so you read the body language just as well as I did. Is the screaming and yelling, though, effective for the jury?
Well, I do think that it gets the jury's attention. Does it necessarily convince the jury or change their mind? I don't know that it does.
They're really fighting over the size of the bullets here, it seems, but they're agreeing that it was a 38 that was found, so why all the objecting over that? I was trying to figure out, were they just objecting because they wanted to punctuate something?
I think it's because the defense is saying, listen, she purchased 38s, meaning she got them specifically to practice, not to go kill him. That's the only reason I think they were making a big deal about it.
And that would lead into the fit of passion defense, which is what she was saying. She was basically not saying, I didn't do it. She was saying, I did do it, but it's not murder one.
Right.
It didn't work, though.
Right. And she was saying it was a fit of rage, but I think the evidence showed more premeditation. You know, 2 days before she buys a gun, 5 shots, that makes a big difference.
No surprise, though, for you.
No, I was not surprised at all. I think based on the evidence, her testimony, I'm not surprised about a conviction.
Under state law, this is a life sentence. The question is whether the extradition treaty might limit that.
Right, and I don't know what that answer is, but it could very well. Extradition treaties often do impose some limits.
So it'll be curious to see where that ends. Judge Wilcott will check in with you at the end of the broadcast. Earlier on in the Herrig case, the defendant herself took the stand and told jurors graphic details about her sex life with the victim. She said those issues caused issues, which pushed her over the edge.
Carl had issues in the bedroom?
Yeah, he was not able to perform without Viagra or without bondage or without something weird or me pretending to be dead. He would not get an erection with normal sex.
And you talked earlier in your interview that was played about a website called Hogtied.
Hogtied.
What was that website?
It's about sadomasochism. It's about bondage.
Okay. And would he make you do things he saw on the website?
Yes, but this all took... Yes, he did. But this was all after we got married. He never hinted to me that he had any sexual issue or fetish. Is that called fetish? Fetish. I cannot say that word. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I never noticed before we got married. What I know is that he was very nervous about his penis. He had a lump in the middle of his penis that he said some woman, when he was deployed, he went to Germany. She sat on his penis. She broke it. He has this lump, and that turned into cancer. He was freaking out about having cancer, and he was freaking out about not performing.
Eventually, Herrig described the moment when she pulled the trigger. She claims it all unfolded when her husband saw her holding her gun to her head. She said that suicide stunt was a desperate attempt to get attention. Her husband, Carl, she says, showed no emotion at that attempt, grabbed her by the throat, and told her to shoot herself in the basement where her blood would not soil his paintings. Then to this.
I just, when I saw going down the steps, I just got up real fast, positioned myself behind him, and I shot the first time, and he died instantly. And he just fell, his body just fell like this. And as he was going down, his right foot was still up in the air, and that's when it buckled and he lost his right shoe. And his body just went boom. It just, I, you know, in my head, he was on the third step going down. Maybe he was in the middle, maybe fourth, fifth, but he was in the middle of the stairs. And since he didn't make that sound, like, you know, if you were paying, since he didn't make that sound, didn't move anymore, I know he died from the first shot.
The state successfully fought back against a lot of that testimony. Here is some of the fiery and combative cross-examination. At times, the witness was asking the attorney questions, the attorney shouting back, I asked the questions here. Let's go straight to the part about the shooting.
You shot Carl Herrig with the same gun that you had Brian Martin put that laser sight on when you bought it, correct?
Yes.
You shot Carl Herrig with the same gun that you practiced with for about an hour 2 days earlier, correct?
Yes.
You shot and killed Carl Herrig by putting not one, not two, but three shots into his body, correct?
Yes.
All right. And you executed him by walking down those 10 steps.
I'm going to sustain that objection.
All right. You shot him. And despite the fact that you said earlier you're not a doctor or a forensic pathologist, you claim the first shot killed him, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yet, that house has 10 steps from the second floor to where his body was. Is that correct?
I believe your words.
All right. You walked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 steps down to where his body was, and you put the gun 12 to 24 inches from his head and pulled the trigger, correct?
Probably.
Probably? Well, did somebody else break into the house and shoot him too?
Objection.
Again, the verdict against Claudia Herrig was guilty of premeditated murder. Still ahead tonight here on the Daily Debrief, the case of a missing California family found dead years after they vanished. Coming up, interrogation recordings of the defendant accused of killing them all. How do his statements bring the prosecutor's financial motive into focus? That is after the break. Law and Crime Network, the premier episode of Brian Ross Investigates. Here on the Debrief is the man himself, Brian Ross, with a look at what's ahead. Brian, good evening.
Well, good evening, Aaron. Tonight, in the wake of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post reporter and outspoken critic of the Saudi government, we decided to take a close look at how the Saudi government has been cracking down on its own dissidents, particularly with the use of social media.
At the heart of the Arab Spring, the movement that released decades of disgust and anger with corrupt and brutal leaders was the ability for instant communication with cell phones, social media like Twitter.
That has been the double-edged sword, that is the double-edged sword of social media.
Sarah Lee Whitson of Human Rights Watch.
A tool that allowed citizens to communicate with each other without the filter of their government propaganda media, that allowed them to exchange opinions, that allowed them, most importantly, to share information, has been turned against them.
Sarah Lee Whitson says Twitter especially owes an apology to Saudi dissidents whose accounts, she says, have been hacked. As for its part, Twitter says it rigorously limits access to sensitive information. We'll have all of that tonight on our program, Aaron.
Brian, I know I'll be watching, and I will see you then. Testimony now in the case of a California man accused of murdering a family of four is focusing on forensics and money. Defendant Charles Merrick could face the death penalty if convicted in the killings of his business associate, Joseph McStay, McStay's wife, and the McStay's two boys. Authorities at first wondered if the McStays fled to Mexico to avoid business debts, but a dirt biker later located their bodies buried in the desert after they disappeared. That is when suspicions focused on the defendant himself. The jury saw images from the grave this week as prosecutors elicited testimony about the recovery of the McStay family's remains. A dirt biker in the desert, as we said, discovered the skull of one of the family members, and that led to the discovery of the entire family. Authorities also recovered the sledgehammer suspected to be the murder weapon. They also found a cord believed to have been tied around victim Joseph McStay's neck. In court yesterday and continuing today, prosecutors played a police interview with defendant Chase Merritt himself. Here, he talks about the victim's finances. And remember, prosecutors say Merritt killed because he needed money.
Joseph doesn't have any enemies. Everybody loves Joseph. Everybody. He has no financial problems that I know of. I mean, him and I, you know, I mean, things were tight over the last few months because of the economy, but stuff has been, over the last couple of months, things have started picking up. I know for sure that his bills are paid. I don't know of anybody that has anything to gain by Joseph being gone. I think everybody that I know has everything to lose. Everything. This business stems almost solely around Joseph. He does all of the sales. You know, Dan is trying to send me some emails and, you know, and try to, you know, need to try to salvage some of the jobs that are trying to send stuff back.
The name Dan you heard there are references to Dan Kavanaugh, the man the defense is pointing to as an alternate suspect in this case. A $25,000 reward for information in the case of a missing Wisconsin teenager will go to the teenager herself. Jamie Kloss escaped from captivity after 88 days and flagged down a passerby for help. Because Kloss provided information which led to her own safe return, the Hormel Foods Company, which employed her parents, is giving a pledged reward directly to Kloss. Authorities say Jake Patterson shot and killed Kloss's parents before kidnapping Kloss herself. He is in the initial stages of prosecution. Judge Wilcott, here one last time. Sort of a happy end to a very sad story.
No, it is, and it's just nice to hear that they've chosen to do that, because it is true, she did rescue herself. Her bravery, her ability to walk away from a horrific situation after 88 days is really remarkable.
It's a miracle in itself that she was indeed able to get away somehow and then get to help before the suspect found her again.
Absolutely, and that she was even able to have the wherewithal to say to somebody, I need help, because after that many days and the trauma she's endured, it's a miracle.
They swarmed around her and protected her. Judge Wilcott, we appreciate your insight as always.
Thanks, Aaron.
It's the end of the day for the Daily Debrief, but not for the Law and Crime Network. For those of you watching just this broadcast, I wish you a good evening. For the rest of you watching our full network coverage, I will be back in a few moments with continuing analysis of the McStay family murder trials. I'll see you along the way. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.